Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about the Latino History Project. It has its roots in Boulder County, but now it's spread around the state. They're hosting an event this coming Sunday at the Boulder Public Library. Then two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You, followed by Naturally with Brigitte Mars. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we'll then spend an hour looking at fracking along the Front Range with some local youth climate activists, members of 350.org and Indigenous leaders who are working to raise awareness about the impact of oil and gas development, particularly here in Boulder County. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Greenhouse gas emissions in Colorado are on a slight downward trend, but much work must be done if the state is going to meet its targets. A new report released by Western Resource Advocates and the Environmental Defense Fund finds that there is a significant gap between the goals of the state's plan and reality. The targets aim to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by at least 26% by 2025 and 50% by 2030. However, Stacy Tellinghausen of the Western Resource Advocates said in a news release that Colorado can't succeed if it continues business as usual, as the state is on track to reduce emissions by only 13% by 2030. The report credits the state's electric utilities, noting that the reductions in emissions from closing coal-fired plants and replacing them with zero-carbon energy generation. However, other sectors, including oil and gas production, are expected to increase emissions. The study shows an especially dire picture of the state's efforts to reduce transportation emissions, adding that Colorado's Air Quality Control Commission has a lot of work to do. Tomorrow, that commission will start a formal rulemaking process to develop greenhouse gas regulations, with a final hearing set to occur in May. Today, a bill centered on tightening vaccine exemptions in Colorado will have its first hearing in the state Senate. Summer Taylor has the story.
Senate Bill 163 is scheduled to be heard in the Senate Health and Human Services Committee in today's session. This is the second attempt by Colorado legislator to enact a bill seeking to increase Colorado's low immunization rate by making the process harder to request exemptions that are non-medical. Last year, Governor Polis opposed House Bill 19-1312, a measure to reduce a non-medical exemptions of vaccines. That bill would have required parents to submit a form in person to the state or local health department instead of submitting it directly to the school. If this new bill is passed, it will require that parents who want to claim religious or personal belief of exemptions to vaccines for their children will either have to provide a certificate signed by a licensed physician or a certificate of completion of an online course about vaccines. Senator Julie Gonzalez, a Democrat from Denver and one of the sponsors of the bill, said at a press briefing on Tuesday that over 84% of Colorado believe vaccines should be required. However, sponsors of the bill have explained that it has been challenging to get Republicans to get on board. Opponents mention concerns about parental rights and privacy. The Colorado Health Choice Alliance is a prominent opponent of this bill. The bill has been supported by the Colorado Chamber of Commerce, as well as medical experts and other medical groups. Colorado has seen declining rates for children vaccinations. The statewide average vaccination rate for MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, among kindergartners is 87.4%, among the lowest in the nation. The rate recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is 95%. The agency says that is the rate that is needed to provide so-called hard protection for those who are unable to get vaccinated because of other health issues. For KGNU, I'm Summer Taylor.
Also up at the Capitol yesterday, a committee of the state Senate heard testimony about a proposed bill for oversight of the regional transportation district. Much of the focus was on how well the disabled community is being served by the agency. The measure includes language that would prohibit RTD from discriminating or denying services to people with disabilities. It also provides a mechanism for civil lawsuits if there's a violation. The Denver Post reports that Julie Reiskin, the director of Colorado Cross Disability Coalition, said the bill is important to provide additional protections for disabled passengers. However, representatives of RTD said the Senate Bill 151 could potentially burden the agency with an avalanche of litigation. The measure will be considered again by the Senate Transportation and Energy Committee on March 3rd. In more news from the legislature, a bill that would abolish the death penalty moved closer to becoming law. The House Judiciary Committee passed the measure by a vote of 6-3. Colorado Public Radio reports that among those who testified in favor of abolishing the death penalty yesterday were crime victims who argued the process is unjust and unfairly applied and can make it impossible to get true closure. A debate by the full House of Representatives is expected in the next few weeks. The Fort Collins City Council approved a massive new development yesterday. The project, known as Montava, includes 4,000 new homes and has faced much resistance from neighbors who fear the city does not have the infrastructure to handle the influx of new people and cars. The approval comes as part of the city's master plan for the development and it failed to pass earlier. Nine News reports that more than a dozen people lined up to speak about how fast and in what ways Fort Collins should grow. One resident said he hopes the city will use foresight, not hindsight, when going forward. The council will still have to approve each of the estimated 16 phases of that project. A study at CU Boulder shows that gender bias influences the approval of research proposals. The review found that male reviewers in the allocation of time for the Hubble Space Telescope rated proposals by female scientists significantly worse than those led by males. The Daily Camera reports that the report also found that stripping out information about the scientists resulted in female-led applications performing slightly better than men's. The report, done in part by Stephanie Johnson of CU's Leeds School of Business, calls for a process of dual anonymization to combat gender bias. Today's forecast calls for snow this afternoon until about 11 tonight, with a daytime high of 26. Tomorrow, sunny skies and a high of 37. Right now, it's about 25 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Back in 2013, the Boulder County Latino History Project brought together Latino high school and college students, along with almost 100 volunteers from the community, in a bid to conduct oral history interviews. And they started with more than 40 interviews done with a diverse array of local Latinos. Over the years, the project has grown to document the rich history of the Latino community, and not just in Boulder County, but now throughout the state. Well, they're hosting an event this coming Sunday to speak about the project and to tell some of the stories that they have been gathering. It's happening Sunday at the Boulder Public Library. KGNU's Rosanna Longo spoke with Jason Romero, who's a director of the Latino History Project. He also teaches Chicano Studies at the Strive Prep Smart Academy in Denver.
So the Latino History Project originated in 2013, and at that time it was actually a project that was very specific to Boulder County. And at that time, really what the project focused on was collecting the histories, the stories of local Latino families. And so I was actually an intern at that time. I had just graduated from CU, and I was an intern. I was one of the videographers who went out there and recorded a lot of these stories. And so that was a really cool experience for me, just to be a part of all of that initial work for the Latino History Project. And then over the past few years, the project has really begun to focus on different communities outside of just Boulder County. So at this point, the Latino History Project has gone to places like Pueblo, Trinidad, the San Luis Valley, Alamosa, and this summer we're actually going to be heading to the Roaring Fork Valley. And the work that we do is collecting the stories, images, artifacts from local Latino communities, from local Latino families, putting that on the Latino History Project website, and then running community and teacher workshops in those different communities in order to get this history out into the classrooms and to the students in the community. So it's a really cool project, and a lot of the work that we do is with K-12 educators. And so as a Chicano studies teacher, that's been really important for me because I've used a lot of these resources in my own curriculum. So even things that are local to Boulder County, things like the KKK and some of the different things that happened around that here in Boulder, and how that targeted Latinos in this area. And those things were, I mean, very shocking to a lot of students, but it also got them really engaged with learning their own history, their own stories.
It's important. It's really important to understand and to center yourself, especially when you have been, in a way, community, ethnicity, race that have been always, mistreated. To understand where you come from and to understand that many times these situations have been repeated again and again.
Right.
To, you know, really feel empowered. But what I would like you to explain to me is something that I learned long ago from Marjorie McIntosh. Mm-hmm. She, spearheaded this project.
Right.
And I was super lucky to interview her a couple of years ago. And she really explained to me that one of the hardest things that she learned through her research is that the damage that our students of color got at the beginning of their young lives was really done at schools because of the lack of knowledge of their own personal background and their own roots, and that by doing that, that affected them in a such deep way.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was my experience. You know, I'm a Chicano from Pueblo, and growing up, I never learned my history in school. I never learned about even the larger narratives, things like the Mexican Revolution and the way that impacted the experience of people in the Southwest. Those were things I never learned in school. And so when I got to college, I had the opportunity to major in ethnic studies. And in that process, I deeply learned my own history. And that really allowed for me to, I think, undo a lot of that damage that had been done. My first year here in Boulder, when I would walk around campus, I would never see anybody who looked like me. I felt so separate from everything that existed in this community where I knew that I belonged. I had at that point already learned the history of Los Seis de Boulder and other people in the Chicano movement because of people I had met in Pueblo. And those were really the ones who inspired me to come to CU in the first place. And so it was really learning my own history, learning about people who were from places like where I was from, people who looked like me, and seeing what they had done that inspired me to even come to college in the first place. And then from that point to go back into the classroom and share those narratives with students, because I remembered how powerful that was for me. When I learned those stories, I felt like I belonged. I felt like I was connected. It just gave me a different sense of self. And that was, I mean, I was addicted to that feeling. And being able to hopefully do a little bit of that through the Latino History Project and in classrooms, I mean, that's what really, I think, drives this project and drives me in my work with this project.
So we have been talking with Jason Romero. And Jason Romero has come also to talk to us about this wonderful event that is happening February the 23rd is a Sunday, and it's from 2 in the afternoon until 4 in the afternoon. It's going to be hosted by the Public Library, so it's going to be in the main branch in the Canyon Theater, and this is Sunday the 23rd from 2 to 4, part of the Boulder County Latino History, and it is a special Latinx history event organized by Families of Color Colorado with the Boulder County Latino History Project, and it is open to the public. Would you speak about that, Jason, the importance of this program that you are bringing and the speakers that are going to be talking to us?
Yes. So we're really excited for this event. There's going to be three speakers that we're having. It's going to be emceed by Linda Arroyo, who was one of the original members of the Boulder County Latino History Project and has been involved since the very beginning. And so three people are going to speak, Linda, Tom Martinez, and Phil Hernandez. Linda is going to talk a little bit about an overview of local Latinx history, talk about the presence of our community in the Grass Grove neighborhood from about the 40s until the 80s. And then after that, we are going to have a presentation from Tom Martinez about his mother, Emma Gomez Martinez, who was an advocate, a businesswoman, an extremely, extremely important member of, or a important figure within local Latino history. So he'll be there presenting. And then after that, Phil Hernandez will talk to us a little bit more about migration. And it's very intentional that we use the word migration to describe the movement of people from Mexico, northern New Mexico, southern Colorado, into the Boulder County area, as well as talking about the forced repatriation of our communities, forced deportations that have started in the 1930s and have continued to happen all the way up until the current times. So we'll have those individuals speak, and then we'll kind of honor Marjorie McIntosh, who's the outgoing coordinator of the Latino History Project, and we'll have some questions and answers.
An event that is happening, again, it's in the main branch of Boulder Public Library that's located at 1001 Arapaho Avenue in Boulder. And this is going to be at the Canyon Theater, Sunday, February the 23rd, from 2 to 4 in the afternoon. And it has speakers, and it has, you know, also a moment of reflecting on the complexities of our history here in Boulder County. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be an event that will, you know, bring us together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're definitely excited. We hope a lot of people are coming. We've done work at the Boulder County Library in the past. And so we really encourage members of the community to come out to hear, to learn, and to participate in this community event.
If you want to have, you know, a last thought, it would be nice to wrap it up.
For me, it's always important to recognize the land that we live on, the history of the land, our own personal history, so that way, as we begin moving forward and trying to construct a better society, a better tomorrow, we can truly create a world where many different worlds can exist.
For KGNU, Rosana Longo.
That was Jason Romero, who is the director of the Latino History Project. Once again, that event, Boulder County Latino History, telling our stories. It's happening Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Boulder Public Library Main Branch.
Boulder County has a reputation of being a leader in progressive values, but not everyone feels welcome here.
You kind of see in the kind of aggregate numbers that Black students are actually falling through the cracks. So I think there's stuff to be done.
When people have these experiences of oppression or a violation of their personal space or their self-respect that are based on race or class or gender, that it's just in the minds of the people who have the experience, that you're just, if you weren't so sensitive, if you weren't always thinking about this stuff. And I think that's an unrealistic view of the world. And it's a view of the world that only the people that haven't had those experiences can really say. It's a privileged position.
Tune in this Thursday morning at 8:30 for the latest episode of Trends, as we look at diversity, equity, and inclusion in Boulder County. That's 8:30 this Thursday morning here at KGNU.
And that is part of our ongoing series, Trends. And if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, we do ask you to do so. And then you can experience our deep dive into issues facing many different people in Boulder County, but people who have often had their voices ignored. Some of our past episodes have included taking a look at isolation amongst our seniors in our community. We've also taken a look at some of the challenges and opportunities facing people with disabilities in Boulder County, as well as challenges facing residents of some of the mobile home parks in Boulder County. So do subscribe to Trends, and you can find that podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And do tune in tomorrow morning just after 8:30 for that latest Trends report, followed by a panel discussion where we further explore some of the issues. It is 8:23. You're listening to KGNU. Coming up in just over 10 minutes' time, we're going to be taking a look at fracking in Boulder County. We'll have some local youth climate activists join us, members of 350.org, and some local Indigenous leaders as well. That is all coming up. Next, though, it's time for Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The House on Friday passed a bill led by Democrats aimed at restoring a provision of the Voting Rights Act that would require certain jurisdictions to obtain pre-clearance from the federal government before implementing any changes to voting practices. Republicans and courts are often reluctant to interfere in a state's right to run its own election machinery, but the federal government does have a history of intervening when voting rights are at stake. The Voting Rights Act update recently passed in the House 228 to 187 and was spearheaded by Representative Terry Sewell, a Democrat of Alabama. It includes language that would put criteria in place to determine, quote, which states and political subdivisions, close quote, would have to seek federal approval in an attempt to crack down on voter suppression. The bill looks to broaden the criteria in which courts can retain the authority to pre-clear voting changes, and the Department of Justice may assign election observers, in addition to requiring jurisdictions to notify the public of any changes to voting practices. Democrats praised the bill, arguing it's necessary to reverse the Supreme Court 2013 Shelby County versus Holder decision and ensure access to fair voting. Quote, it demonstrates the states and localities, and in particular those that were formerly subject to pre-clearance, have engaged in various voting suppression tactics, such as imposing burdensome proof of citizenship laws, polling place closures, purges of voter rolls, and significant scalebacks to early voting periods, close quote, according to House Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler of New York, who said during debate ahead of the vote, quote, the record is clear that substantial voter suppression exists across the country, that H.R. 4 coverage formula is necessary to address this discrimination, close quote. The states and the political subdivisions would be subject to preclearance for 10 years, quote, if 15 or more voting rights violations occurred in the state during the previous 25 years, or 10 or more violations occurred during the previous 25 years, at least one of which was committed by the state itself. A political subdivision as a separate unit shall also be subject to preclearance for a 10-year period if 3 or more voting rights violations occurred during the previous 25 years, close quote. The measure, now known as Senate Bill 561, the Voting Rights Advancement Act, faces an unlikely path forward in the Republican-controlled Senate. Senator Mitch McConnell, who boasts he is the, quote, grim reaper when it comes to House bills being forwarded to him, is now being contacted by thousands of Americans asking him to make an exception to ensure fair elections. If you have thoughts on the Voting Rights Amendment Act, Senate Bill 561, you can contact your senators and, as well, Mitch McConnell himself. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Friends of KGNU, our spring fund drive is coming up March 4th through the 15th. As always, we rely on volunteers to take contributions on the phone during our drives. For more information and to sign up for a shift to help your community radio station, go to kgnu.org.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I've been doing a series on natural remedies for libido, pleasure, and passion. And I wanted to remind us of the virtues of many of our culinary herbs that enliven all our senses. So when we're making food, by adding more of these culinary spices, it turns us on and activates our brain and nourishes us, can improve circulation. So what are some of these spices of love? Well, I certainly think of anise and fennel seed. They were once added to wedding cakes to stimulate wedding night vigor. You can use your imagination to contemplate that one. Another favorite is cardamom. Cardamom is a member of the ginger family, also a relative of turmeric. And cardamom has long been used as an ingredient in love potions. You know, it's interesting, many things that were once considered ingredients in love potions are now known to be bona fide aphrodisiacs. In Arabic culture, cardamom is often added to pastries and coffees as a sign of hospitality. It freshens your breath, another good reason to have cardamom as an ally. Cinnamon is a great one, very warming. Cinnamon is a member of the laurel family. I like to use the Cinnamomum xylanicum or the cinnamon. It's the bark of a tree, and it's very warming and improves circulation. It's considered a vasodilator, and by increasing circulation, it's going to make us feel warmer, but also help increase circulation to our peripheral parts of our body, including the genitalia, the hands, and the feet. And weather is cold, how wonderful to add cinnamon. It's also naturally sweet and stabilizes blood sugar. Garlic. Well, we all know that garlic gives us garlic breath, so the trick is to get you and your sweetie to eat the garlic together, and then you won't notice it. Garlic can help improve circulation. It's warming, and it has, a way of waking us up. It's also antiparasitic, so lots of good reasons to use more garlic in our diet. And last one is vanilla, a member of the orchid family. The word vanilla actually derives from the Latin vena, meaning sheath, pod, or little vagina, in reference to the suggestive shape of the flower. So vanilla is probably the smell the closest associated with mother's milk, but it has long been considered an aphrodisiac, an aromatic, a stimulant. So you might think about spicing up your food. Spice up your love life at the same time. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
You can hear Brigitte Mars and Naturally every Wednesday morning here at KGNU.